Welcome back to another edition of the Fried Egg Podcast. Today's episode is brought to you by our friends over at Toro. Those big agricultural tractors you see working on golf courses, with their clutch and complicated lever pulling sequences in a turf maintenance application, they're like stepping onto the first tee, not knowing which swing you have that day. Toro's new Outcross 9060 can do everything those clunky tractors can, but with tons less stress on the operator and on the turf. With automotive controls and programmable attachment parameters, even rookies on the crew can be trusted with aerating, top dressing, mowing grass, loading sand, and removing snow from around the clubhouse in the winter. The Toro Outcross 9060 is like having all of your best golf shots saved, ready for use each and every round. Follow at Toro Golf on Twitter and reach out to your local Toro distributor to schedule a demo. All right, today's episode is a U.S. Women's Open special. We virtually sit down on Zoom with Chris Ortmeier, Director of Agronomy at Champions Golf Club, which is the host for this U.S. Women's Open, a unique host in the sense that due to the December rescheduled date, they will be hosting it at both of their 18-hole courses, Cypress Creek, as well as the Jackrabbit course. So we talked to Chris Ortmeier, Director of Agronomy there, as well as Darren Bavard, who is the Director of Championship Agronomy for the USGA. So unique little conversation between the USGA agronomist and the host superintendent, Chris, and how they prep and different experiences through the years, as well as what we should see ahead of this week's U.S. Women's Open. So hope you guys enjoy this conversation. And without further ado, here is Chris and Darren.
I miss a green, for example. I'm already upset. When I find my ball in the bunker, I'm really upset. And when I find my ball in a
fried egg.
Fried egg.
The dreaded fried egg.
Fried egg.
Fried egg.
Fried egg.
Fried egg.
Fried egg lie, I'm about ready to run off the golf course.
With COVID, imagine having two golf courses to prepare for a championship's been a little bit more stressful for you, Chris, huh?
Yeah, no question about it. And even anticipating it beforehand, it really hasn't surfaced as much, I would say, until just recently here, the last 24 hours. Biggest thing by far is just with two golf courses, it's not only twice the amount of areas to prepare and maintain, but it's twice the amount of people. And from a volunteer standpoint, you know, bringing in 35 individuals who are very good at what we do, but have essentially never been on property has been by far the greatest challenge up until this point. The logistics, the planning, the preparation to get them all here, to get them somewhat familiar with the property, the jobs they're going to be completing, and then ultimately, you know, completed at a high level for the championship this morning has required significantly more than we kind of originally anticipated.
Yeah. And Darren, obviously 36 hole course prep isn't that new to you, but it's new in an open sense. And Darren, you know, obviously with all the amateur events that the USGA runs are typically over 36 holes. From your sense, how does it differ from an 18-hole prep?
Well, I think the biggest thing is, you know, again, when you trying, one, to have the courses play similarly, not necessarily to each other, but so that on Thursday and Friday, when the players are playing over 2 days, that, you know, the players experience that play Cypress on Thursday experience the same thing that the players on Jackrabbit experienced Friday, so to speak, so that it's a fair comparable challenge across 36 holes. Whereas, you know, if you have a situation where something changes on an 18-hole golf course, Andy, it's a situation where everybody's playing the same golf course every day. So the variation is not as big a deal, but, you know, and again, just, it's the same stuff. It's twice as many people. it's trying to, you know, get the little details over twice as much property and that type of stuff. There's it's just a matter of wanting, you know, one, the playing conditions to be great, but it's also the player experience and all of the little things that we do for the player experience to be the best that they, you know, can have.
Yeah, something I wanted to talk about is obviously you guys have been coordinating, working together on this project, this tournament for years. Can you guys walk us through kind of, you know, from each of your perspectives, how a U.S. Women's Open setup and the relationship between host course director of agronomy, Chris, and the USGA agronomy team kind of, you know, works from a few years out till this week?
So, yeah, I'll start just because it's something that I'm used to doing. I believe the first time I was on this property with Chris was either late 2016 or early 2017. And, you know, it's developing a relationship. One, we have to trust each other. You know, we've got to know that, you know, hey, what I'm trying to accomplish and what he's trying to accomplish are the same thing. And it's just developing that relationship, learning personalities, while also learning agronomy and learning the golf course. And then, you know, in this case, Champions undertook a putting green renovation to regrass and rebuild the greens on Cypress Creek, which made it so that Chris got to learn a whole different set of agronomy, at least compared to what he was dealing with on Cypress before. All positive, but, you know, and then beyond that, it's just the progression leading into the event of starting to dial down to, you know, details. You know, Chris knows his golf course infinitely better than I do. I know how the USGA conducts championships and what things are important from our side. So it's meshing those things up, his expertise with Champions Golf Club and my expertise with USGA championships.
Yeah, no, I think I'd say the same thing, Andy. I mean, like Darren said, I think we signed the agreement back in like February of 16. We found out we were going to be hosting it. So it really is neat how the relationships developed over the last 3 or 4 years. And then, yeah, I mean, like Darren said, a lot of coordination before, during, and after the construction of the putting greens and bunkers on Cypress Creek. And then also back in the spring, you know, when we found out about the date change and then ultimately the second golf course comes in and then incorporation of a bunker renovation project on the Jackrabbit golf course, all while significant travel restrictions are placed on Darren and his inability to be here. You know, definitely complicated things, but I'd say equal to, or maybe even just as much, or maybe more than, I would say, the enjoyment and preparing for the event. I think ultimately successfully completing the championship on Sunday would be the relationships that we've developed, you know, Darren being one of them and the rest of the USGA over the last 3 or 4 years have been really, really good and things that I'm looking forward to taking with me, you know, for the rest of my career.
Yeah. I wanted to talk about the Jackrabbit course, because obviously in early spring, you guys find out, you know, obviously you get postponed, and then all of a sudden, you know, the Jackrabbit course is now a co-host of the opening two rounds. And, you know, you guys do a bunker project over the summer, but walk us through, you know, the prep for that and understanding the golf course from a setup standpoint. Usually, you know, this is something that you guys at the USGA would evaluate for a couple of years. And with the limited travel, are you going to be leaning more on Chris and his staff than typical, or, you know, how's that whole process work for you guys?
Well, right now it's kind of evened out pretty quickly. But because of travel restrictions, because of not knowing until, you know, March or April that this change was going to be made, the first time I saw Jackrabbit Golf Course was Thursday morning.
Wow.
First time I ever even been out on it at all. So, you know, again, relying heavily on Chris in terms of, you know, hey, our programs are the same. The greens are very similar in terms of how they, you know, perform, speeds, and those type of things, which, by the way, has turned out to be 100% true. From a course set up for, you know, the actual, you know, tees, hole locations, and that type of stuff, that's Shannon Roulard, who is our director of this championship. She's director for the Women's Open. And, you know, even for her, the learning curve was really steep. She was able to make some trips out over the summer. But yeah, it's just, you know, you're focused on Cypress Creek. That's what the focus has been all the way up until April. And all of a sudden it's like, oh, now we have another 18-hole golf course to figure out, you know, how we make it the best that it can be and present the best test to the players. And we had to figure it out in a short period of time. So it's just different. Now that I've been on site for 4 or 5 days, what I've found out is Chris knows his golf courses really well, and everything that he predicted would happen has happened, which that's a credit to him and his staff.
Yeah, Chris, I'd love to hear about the bunker project. I don't, from what I read, it wasn't planned until, you know, the you guys knew you were doing the two course setup. Talk about just, you know, kind of, obviously 2020 has been a strange year for everybody in their workplace. I imagine that this bunker project was kind of a little bit of a surprise, and then it was probably a fun project to undertake on a deadline.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, very quickly after we kind of had settled on the date and the second course came into the picture, everyone kind of agreed that improving the bunkers on Jackrabbit would not only help, you know, from an inclement weather standpoint and our ability to, if we do get a heavier rain event during the tournament, get them back and play as quick as possible, but have them essentially play as consistent to the Cypress Creek course as possible. And so, yeah, within a couple of weeks, we were kind of, you know, reaching out to contractors, trying to touch base with architects and try to get everybody on the same page so that we could make a decision quick. And one of the things early on, at least, with the kind of coronavirus pandemic, is a lot of companies kind of put some of their projects on hold. So the first thing was kind of confirming availability, and we're fortunate to have a really good partnership with Heritage Links Construction Company, John O'Donnell, Doug Wright, those guys over there. They actually office just down the street from us. They were the ones that helped us out with the Cypress project, and so very quickly got them involved, started trying to define scope, reached out to Bo Welling Design, who he and Shane had some history on the Jackrabbit Golf Course, which is originally a George Fazio design back in the 60s, renovated by Tom in the early 2000s, who Bo Welling and Shane were working with the Fazio group then. So get the architect figured out, get the construction, you know, the contractor figured out, and within a few weeks we're breaking ground. And so fortunate to have 36 holes here that we could close 1-9 at a time on Jackrabbit to the membership, and everybody was very understanding and supportive there. But the work, I mean, it was a total reconstruction in the bunkers, without any substantial changes to kind of, you know, placement or playability. But essentially now we're left with tremendous bunkers that'll perform and play very well for not only the ladies this week, but the membership as well.
Yeah. And just in terms of something that's been a common theme so far in the conversations a little bit, has been consistency on the two courses for the championship over 2 days. How do you guys go about, and Chris, from your standpoint of weeks leading into the tournament, how are you, you know, trying to achieve that with what you're doing? And then Darren, maybe you can rebut with, you know, how you guys at the USGA attempt to do it week of, or, you know, days leading into it. It'd be interesting to see kind of the long range plan leading into the week of.
Yeah. So I think for us, Andy, I would say for all superintendents, one of the biggest things they push for every day is consistency throughout the property. And so we treat, you know, every green, every hole the same in terms of daily practices and scheduling, in order to ensure that all the surfaces play is not only as good as they can, but as consistently as possible. And so, you know, thankfully all 36 holes operates out of the same shop with the same crew. And so didn't take a whole lot in terms of training and preparations for our guys, but really just kind of interacting with the Darren and the rest of the USGA to define some objectives, and then developing some programs and putting things in motion to make sure that we were able to achieve the results that the USGA wanted for the week of the championship.
Yeah, and I would say from a setup standpoint that, you know, and fortunately the greens on both of these golf courses can handle similar speeds. So I think they'll be very close. But it's not necessarily from our perspective of both sets of greens need to be the same speed, but kind of like I said in a convoluted way earlier, I want Jackrabbit to play the same on Thursday and Friday if possible, and the same with Cypress Creek. So from the USGA side, we're actually collecting putting green speed data every morning on every green, get additional readings in the afternoon to see, you know, are they slowing down similarly? We're checking firmness every day. Again, to make sure that our ranges are within reason on both golf courses. And, you know, fortunately, with the weather that, you know, is currently here with cool temperatures, low dew points, it really does make it nice to prepare putting greens, because there's not a lot of surprises when the weather is like this. But it's just collecting a lot of data. It's getting feedback from our course setup team in terms of, you know, the numbers are quantitative data, but it's the qualitative data that you hear from our course setup team to say that, you know, hey, they're putting great. Everything's working really well. We really like where we're at. So there's a feel component to it, and then there's a hard numbers component to it that we make work together.
You sound like a scout, you know, saying this guy passes the eye test, and then you got the numbers too to back it up.
Correct. It's very similar. Where again, you have to have baselines to know, hey, did the greens get firmer? Did they get softer? Did they get faster? Did they get slower? And if you don't have that, otherwise you're just guessing. So it's common for someone to say, you know, what's the number today? And you give them a number and they say, oh, really? They feel faster than they were yesterday. And it's like, well, they may feel faster, but we have the data suggest they're pretty much the same as they were yesterday. So,
hey, Darren, I'm curious, this is just a follow-up. In your experience with the USGA, obviously, I imagine it's a huge advantage having both courses on the same property. And as you have alluded to, you know, Chris has done a good job. They're very consistent with each other. And then, you know, the style of the greens is very consistent. Do any championships jump to mind where you maybe had host courses in different locales that made it, you know, extremely challenging, or, you know, even had a weather event one place that, you know, because oftentimes these host courses might be 20 minutes apart, where you had a weather event one place and nothing at the other course?
I personally have not run into that situation with the weather yet, thankfully, but I've certainly, been in situations where, the golf course is maybe 10 or 12 miles apart or even further, and the golf courses can be completely different. You can have bent grass greens on one golf course and POA greens on the other, an old style Donald Ross golf course with sharper contours, and then a newer style, golf course that's, flatter greens. And it is nice having one, the same variety of grass on the putting greens. And again, being in a situation where both golf courses are run by the same golf course superintendent. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times when you're doing the two host site, one of the biggest challenges is two completely different maintenance programs run by two completely different people. But in general, it goes very smooth. If we've done the work that, we're supposed to do leading into a championship, it's generally not a problem. But again, with the short lead in that we've had, I'm certainly glad that I'm rolling with the same guy on both golf courses for this Women's Open, that's for sure.
Yeah, it's definitely it's a blessing, with the venue you guys had set up, that you weren't scrambling to find another course in town that could host it, and champions had the ability to just say, oh, we could just do it at our other course. Kind of thinking about it, Chris, from your standpoint, how would you describe, the similarities and then also the differences in each golf course for viewers?
Yeah, so again, one of our founders, Jackie Burke and Jimmy DeMeritt, one of the things they were dead set on was bringing champions to Houston, Texas, and bringing championship golf to the South. And so from inception, they kind of had a vision for both golf courses to be capable of hosting major championships. And so they also wanted to have a little bit of variety between the two. So two different architects from the beginning. Cypress Creek was a Ralph Plummer, just very, very big greens. And then, Jackrabbit was built a few years later by George Fazio, with, again, a little bit smaller greens, a little bit more contouring there. And then when Fazio redid Jackrabbit in the early 2000s, really made an attempt to move as much earth as possible. We're still limited in Houston with how much topography we have to work with, but trying to provide a slight contrast between the two golf courses. But both great golf courses. And I'd say the biggest difference would be, to me, putting greens on Cypress Creek average about 10,000 square feet a piece. We've got a couple of them up near 14,000 square feet. So just massive, relatively massive greens over there, and a little bit kinder complexes, where I would say Jackrabbit averages about 6,500 square feet of green, but a little bit more movement in the complexes. And I think with that can play a little bit more difficult depending on the conditions for the ladies this week. So, both courses played host to the amateur back in 93 that we hosted. And so I'm excited to see Jackrabbit kind of back in the spotlight and anxious to see how the ladies handle it this week.
Now for a quick word from our sponsor, Toro. For more than a century, with cutting-edge turf equipment and irrigation solutions, Toro has had your front nine covered and your back nine too. In fact, Toro's always had your back, period. Toro is as committed to your long-term success as tour pros are committed to their shot. That's down to top-notch customer service from Toro and its dedicated local distributors, both of whom are passionate about delivering turf equipment and irrigation solutions that solve real-world problems. Follow at Toro Golf on Twitter and reach out to your local Toro distributor today. Now back to Chris Ortmeier and Darren Bavard.
Darren, in terms of December date, how does it change, the potential agronomic conditions for versus a May date? And I guess this is a question for both you guys. Like, is there anything that you're really happy with, like happy that it's in December for? And is there anything that, you know, you wish you had the May date for? If you could take the best of both worlds and you get, you know, one, a couple things from May and a couple things from December, what would they be?
I'll start with the December date since we're here right now. The fact that we're prepping two golf courses and, again, trying to get volunteers and equipment and everything squared away. Bermuda grass isn't growing very aggressively right now. So it offers us some options to, you know, not have to fully mow out both golf courses every day. We can remove dew and on one course mow out the other course, and visually and from a playability standpoint, they're both still really good. If we were, you know, if you were two courses in a May date, it would certainly, you'd have to mow both of them. But the other thing I believe is that the performance of the greens with the weather right now is from what I've learned in the last, you know, 4, 5, 6 days is very predictable. You're not going to get surges in growth of the grass and that affects speed and those type of things. So from that perspective, I think it's been very positive. Probably the one thing I wish I had from May was the rough, with a frost that just hit early last week. The rough has gone off color. It's not growing as aggressively as it's not growing at all for the most part. So it may be a little more forgiving than a typical open setup. But and, you know, I have to wear like 3 layers and gloves and everything in the morning. I could.
You're talking to a Chicagoan. You're not going to get any sympathy from me.
I hear you, but I could go for a little bit warmer temperatures in the morning.
Yeah, I'd say the same thing. The biggest difference being the weather, and I think there's pros and cons to both, right? The spring, early summer date would have provided much more predictability in terms of the range of temperatures we could have, as well as potential for inclement weather is pretty minimal there, where kind of long-term planning coming into December, you know, we could be as high in Houston, we could be as high as 85 or as low as 25. The wind can blow from every direction. You know, we got snow on December 10th in 2017. So that was the hard part for me, was I got to be prepared for anything. 'Cause we could be, you know, fortunately we're cooler and it's not requiring, you know, as much out of us to get the speeds and the conditions we need. But 3 weeks ago, you know, we could have been double cutting and rolling to try to get us where we need to be. And I mean, really the rough didn't shut down until just last week. We kind of had our first frost, and where everything was still lush and growing, you know, I would say still green. You'll see on TV, it kind of shut everything down in the rough, which is nice. It's provided a pretty good look, I feel like, for the golf course that not many people get to see.
Yeah, while the rough might not be quite as thick, it could be a little bit less predictable in a way, you know? And it almost might encourage people to try out and try for some shots they might not have if it was thicker, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's certainly it's consistently inconsistent as you go through the golf course. So you could get the players could draw a lie where the ball's, you know, sitting up and looks great. And, you know, conversely, it can sit down and the rough's kind of clumpy because it's not growing evenly anymore. And so, yeah, it's going to be, you know, it offer the situation too, where somebody may think they have a better lie than they do and try to do something that, you know, maybe they shouldn't. So, and that, you know, that's fun. It's fun to watch. And, you know, part of the skill of the game is being able to read that lie in the rough and make a decision on how aggressive you can be.
Yeah, it was. I recorded a podcast with Tom Doak last week about his, course Memorial Park, his renovation there, and he watched the Houston Open, obviously the first year they played, and he remarked about how he didn't understand how unpredictable that Bermuda rough was going to be for the best players in the world. And I imagine compared to, you know, the thick, lush, pretty penal, you know, it's you, what you see is what you're going to get. That Bermuda adds almost another layer of challenge for in the rough for the best players in the world.
Yeah, I think that's accurate. I mean, when you're, you know, Kentucky bluegrass, ryegrass rough, it's lush, it's thick, it's heavy. Especially, I mean, if you look back at Wingfoot in September, for sure. Whereas the Bermuda is, you know, it's a little more unpredictable anyway. And I think it's really going to be unpredictable with just the fact that, again, it's not growing aggressively, but they had done such a good job leading in of getting the rough up to the height that we thought we wanted. So it's still going to be thick. It's not like it's, you know, it's not going to be a layup at all. That's for sure. Mm-hmm.
Hey, Chris, you've had since you take over the job as director of agronomy there, you've had kind of a crazy, weather events, and now you've got the championship that you're preparing for that gets moved. I'm interested, how does the stress of a major championship week compare to that of a 500-year flood with Hurricane Harvey?
Yeah, Both were, I would say both are stressful. And I'm trying to think back to kind of compare the two. You know, Harvey was about a year after another flood. So my first flood when I was here was kind of what we call the tax day floods, which was 16. And that was honestly not as much rain, but it fell in a shorter period of time. And had significant silt deposits and things like that. And that's the first experience I had at all with kind of flood remediation on a golf course. And so figuring out how to, in a very short period of time, you know, remove all the silt deposits and all that was very stressful. Thankfully, through that event, we had figured out the process so that when Harvey came, we kind of were a little bit more prepared, but nobody's prepared for 37 inches of rain to a certain degree. So, that one was definitely tough. The tournament, you know, in a slightly different regard, I spent prior to my time here at Champion, spent several years at Colonial Country Club up in Fort Worth. And so thankfully had a little bit of a base in terms of kind of prepping for a large tournament. However, PGA Tour versus USGA Championship, USGA Major is definitely different, 18 holes versus 36 holes. So, you know, Andy, I would say both of them are tough, but it's been my experience, and I've grown to really love preparing golf courses for championships. And to me, the higher the bar, the sweeter it feels when it's over, when you can kind of work through everything and then ultimately kind of relish in the success of the event after the fact. So I would say that's how I compare the two.
Yeah, I imagine that the one is like you're kind of a loathing, you know, stress of the flood, and then, you know, with a championship, it's more of an excited stress where it's a lot of work, but it's, you know, you're building towards something, and the other one, you're just trying to pick up the pieces.
Yeah. Again, superintendents spend most of our careers mad at Mother Nature. So that's probably not atypical.
I think the other important thing about that too is that the stress of championship preparation is wanting to get it right and wanting to put everything out there absolutely as best as you can. And you have a lot of time to plan for that stress. And, you know, some of that stress, I think, we heap upon ourselves, because we want to do a great job and we want the players to have a great experience. The stress that comes from Mother Nature is stress that we don't have any control over, and it's hard to plan for. So I, you know, working championships, Andy, I've been involved in both, where I'm worried about the stress from weather and I'm worried about the stress for just course preparation, you know, all wound up into one. And I'll tell you, I'll take the stress for course preparation every time, because I feel like I have a little bit more control over that.
Yeah. I imagine that the weather app refresh rate is always high for you, Chris, like in any week. My wife, I think every golfer pays attention to the weather more than, like, my wife always makes fun of me. She's like, you always know what's going on in the weather. And I'm like, well, you know, kind of. So, but like for a superintendent, you're already doing that a ton. But for a championship week, for both of you guys, it's just got to be like a every like hour occurrence, huh?
Yeah, for sure. I will say it's extremely nice. The USGA has an on-site meteorologist here, and Jake gives our updates every day, and he's been extremely accurate. So it does slightly reduce the amount of time I spend on my phone staring at models, but there's almost kind of a because of the comfort level that I've developed with kind of, I guess, acclimating to the apps that I look at year round, even with the on-site professional, I still find myself corroborating that with the apps and all the things that I normally do.
Yeah. And from my perspective, it's funny when you talk about the refresh rate on the weather apps. When you look at the 7-day forecast or the 10-day forecast and it's favorable, you look at it and you go, man, that is great. This is going to be awesome. And when you look at it and it's unfavorable, you say, oh, but that's 7 or 8 days away. It can change. So you know, when it looks good, you kind of think, you know, okay, this is spot on. When it looks bad, you hope it changes, and, you know, you just deal with it as it comes, I guess.
It's like the old, that, well, 40% chance of rain, that means that's 60% chance that it won't rain.
Yeah, unfortunately, the USGA, for our championships, we don't have a good track record with the 60% chance that it won't rain. So
yeah, it's I agree with that. It always seems to rain. But Darren, with your perspective, from an agronomic sense, you know, do you guys approach women's championships and men's the same, or is there slight differences in how you prepare the course for the different styles of play, or is it pretty uniform?
Our preparation, realistically, for all of our championships, we try to have a consistent philosophy, consistent protocols. Obviously, it's a matter of degree, but I would say for respective championships, Andy, for women's open versus men's open, there is no difference in the agronomic preparation. Now, there may be difference in course setup. The rough may not be as tall. Obviously, you're not playing the golf course as long and those type of things. But from an agronomic perspective, no, there's not. You know, we put every bit as much thought and effort into the ladies' championships as we do their, you know, male counterparts. So it's all about challenging the best players in the world. And, you know, it's about having a healthy golf course when we're done as well. You know, we're here for a week. We're a guest. Mm-hmm. Chris gets to pick up the pieces on December 14th and, has the membership of champions to then please as well. So we're very respectful of, you know, hopefully leaving the golf course in really good condition when we get out of here. But no, it's you know, speeds on these greens, obviously the greens are different, Andy, but in terms of actual speeds, they'll be every bit as fast as they were for the U.S. Open.
Mm-hmm. With the Cypress course, what are some holes in particular you guys are excited to watch play out just for the viewers? Obviously, Jackrabbit's got, but, you know, more listeners of this will probably see a lot more of Cypress Creek.
Darren, you want to go first? You want me to take it?
I'll go first because I'm just sitting here as he's asking the question, thinking in my head. I'm excited to watch number six, par four with the water hazard or penalty area of front right, really along the whole right-hand side of the green. If you get moving right a little bit, it's pretty easy for that hazard to come into play. And probably the 13th hole, I'm just interested because it's kind of a bite off as much as you can chew on the tee shot. As you hit it down that golf ball. So I'm interested to see, how they play the hole. Those are the two that I would pick out.
Yeah, both those are going to be good. I would add number four, which is a long par three over the creek, over Cypress Creek, with some challenging hole locations that, because of the length and then the kind of greens contour, is going to have to kind of work a bowl in the front part of the green a little bit. It'll be anxious to see them play that one. And then I would probably say 14 as well. 14, similar to six, as Darren described, a longer par four with water front left of the green. But again, one of the biggest, actually it is the biggest green on Cypress at about 14,000 square feet. And so, you know, just because you're on the green doesn't necessarily mean you've got an easy ride home. So those would be the two that I'm looking forward to seeing.
Yeah, that 14th seems like it could play wildly different depending on where you guys put the pin.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's both of those holes, 6 and 14. Not surprisingly, the greens work towards the water. So, again, the players would have to be careful. But one thing I've learned is they're really, really good at what they do.
Yeah, they're the precision is just unbelievable from the women professionals. It is astonishing to watch. They're so good at what they do. It's out of this world.
It's a lot of fun to watch.
All right, we got to get a story time in. Chris, I know this, I'm putting you on the spot here, but I need your best Jackie Burke story.
Oh, geez. I'm not a good storyteller, but Andy, do you know Mr. Burke? Have you met him before?
I've not met him. I've read a decent amount of it. I've had some friends that have met him playing down at the Champions Cup, but they say he's just an incredible guy.
Yeah. So again, anybody that knows him knows that one, he's from a different generation, right? He's 97 years old. He was a Marine, played professionally through the 50s, early 60s, had an accomplished playing career, Masters champion, PGA champion. But he's 97 years old and he's still at work 7 days a week at 10 a.m. or 9:30, kind of on the money, and just eats, sleeps, and breathes golf. So kind of the story I'd say I've been telling here lately is going back to what Darren talked about with kind of date change to December, focus, you know, on conditions and how we prepare the golf courses. And one of the things we quickly identified was growing up the rough. And to us, one of the best ways we did that and preserved it was to put carts on path early. So October 1, we decided we're going cart path only, both golf courses. And so October 2nd and 3rd rolls around. And of course, we've got some unhappy members that are kind of struggling to be able to even play with some physical limitations and things like that. And so Thursday afternoon staff meeting rolls around, and we're in there kind of talking about options and handicap flags and, you know, how do we try to manage that and keep people honest and everything else. And Mr. Burke's sitting there, and he kind of looks up at the group and, straight faced as he can be, says, you know, what kind of a pansy do you have to be to put a handicap flag on the back of your golf cart? I mean, that's got to be the most embarrassing thing you can do. And, you know, again, I would say for most golfers, if they have the opportunity to have a handicap flag and get off the path and play the golf course that way, they'll take it every chance they can get. I would say most places they struggle with doctors writing notes for each other to have a handicap flag. And here, Mr. Burke is 97 years old, a true Marine and Texan that takes a lot of pride in what he does. And, you know, me and the head pro kind of look at each other and we just kind of shake our heads.
Yeah, you guys are thinking, so how do we message this? Like the membership.
And again, there was a couple of other expletives in there, but I'll leave them, so.
Darren, I'd love to hear maybe your favorite, you've probably got so many, but what are your favorite championship memories from your long history with the USGA, whether it be pre-setup or during or post-championship?
Oh, boy. That's a tough one, Andy. You kind of put me on the spot.
I know.
There.
Just I know.
Think about it.
Putting both of you on the spot.
You know, it's probably in thinking about the U.S. Open at Marion in 2013. Sitting in, there was a lot of debate about certain greens, obviously, number five in particular. And Matt Schaefer, who's the golf course superintendent there, if you know, who's very colorful to begin with, where it's 4:30 in the morning, and we're having a conversation about whether or not we're going to roll the fifth green or not. And Matt's starting to raise his voice. I mean, Matt and I have a great relationship, still great friends. And John Zimmers, who at the time was the superintendent at Oakmont, is now at Inverness, looks over and he goes, Darren, I think if you don't give in, Matt is going to yell at you. And I told him, I said, well, he can yell at me all at once because Matt Schaefer's name's not on the bottom of my paycheck. So anyway, after some long conversations, the decision is finally made that we will indeed roll the fifth green. And Andy, I just remember going out there for the first groups that came through and sitting in the grandstand. I was the only one there. There was nobody else there. And watching to make sure that the whole location still worked after we had rolled the green. So unfortunately, most of my memories are, you know,
the anxiety level had to be so high.
Anxiety level being extremely high. There's no doubt about it. I remember that one in particular, just because you got John Zimmers, who's, you know, a great superintendent in his own right, sitting there stirring the pot between me and Matt Schaefer. And so there's always troublemakers around.
I had a couple buddies that worked for Matt Schaefer who ended up in Chicago at their respective clubs, and their Matt Schaefer stories were endless.
Yeah, well, and you had Scott Bordner, who came out to Chicago Golf Club for a while.
Brian Palmer.
You know, it's funny, though, real quick, the story that Chris told about Mr. Burke. I remember, I think it was the second time that I was here, I was on the eighth green and looking at something, whatever. And here's Mr. Burke. You know, I've met him a couple of different times. He's the owner of Champions Golf Club. He can do whatever he wants to do. And he pulls up in his golf cart. He stops on the path, gets out of the cart, and walks over to where we're all standing. The thought of driving that golf cart, you know, anywhere that it didn't belong just never occurred to him. And it made a heck of an impression on me that morning that, you know, hey, here's somebody that really gets it. Or it, you know, walks the walk, so to speak. So it's been fantastic getting to know him a little bit.
My uncle was a golf pro, and I remember playing around with him when I was younger, and we were in carts, and I parked the cart, like, you know, a yard away from a cart path, and I'll never forget him saying to me, he goes, you know, Andy, I'm glad you parked that there. I was talking to the pro beforehand at this course, and he was telling me that the membership's really worried about the cart path getting worn out.
Yeah, I bet they are.
And every time I'm near a cart path at a cart, I think about that. That's the first thing that comes into my head. And, you know, I've used it a few times on my buddies. But, hey, I have a really stupid – this is a stupid question, but I've always thought about it. And this is something that I've wondered. When you're in between days, right, do you guys cut new cups? But you have the same pin on the same course, you know, for Thursday and Friday with this split setup. And you mow and roll the greens every morning. Do you cut a new cup? How does that work? Or does the cup just stay there? This is a dumb question. I'm going to sound like an idiot, but I just have always wondered about this.
It stays where it is.
No new cup.
No, Jack Rabbit will have... It, you know, on Thursday and Friday, we'll have the same hole location. And unless we inspect the cups and everything, Andy, to make sure there's no damage or no problem. But as long as the cup is in good shape, they'll be in the same spot on Cypress and Jackrabbit both Thursday and Friday.
Does it get any new paint? Nothing?
Nope. Yep. We definitely repaint them.
All right.
touch them up, make sure they look good. So, but yeah, absolutely. We put a new coat of paint on them.
I was just curious. It's something I've always thought about. It's like, do they put it back in, mow it, and then recut it, or is it just they just leave it as is?
Yeah, we just always tell the maintenance team, whether it's a mower or a roller, make sure you go center cut over the cup, nothing on the edge or whatever. So, but yep, they stay in the same spot, and usually it works out pretty good.
Yeah. All right. Well, hey, guys, you guys have a busy week. I want to get you out of here so you can get back to much more important things than talking to me. But congratulations on getting this all worked out. And I can't wait to watch this week. And I'm hoping for great weather and no rain for you guys.
Yeah, thanks. From my perspective, really appreciate it, and really appreciate the time, and I'm excited to watch the championship unfold.
Yeah, Andy, thanks a bunch for having me on. Really enjoyed the talk.